very strong internal student demand. This is built, this new program is built on a very strong minor that currently averages about 66 students a year in it. So it's a very large minor. We've surveyed these minors, and 80% of them, a little more than 80% of them, said that they would major in legal studies if it were available to them. So we have strong internal demand. We also believe that students who aren't in the minor would consider this major, because we have around 60 to 90 students a year take the law school admissions test, and we think that people who want to be lawyers, go to law school, will be a natural audience for this minor. So already 60 to 90 students a year are taking this law school admissions test. So internal demand looks very good. We also think that we'll have good external demand and draw students to WKU who might not necessarily come here without this program. Only Northern Kentucky University has a similar liberal arts program that's designed somewhat similar to ours, although I think ours is going to be better. And so we're optimistic that we'll not only serve students in our region who currently don't have this kind of program, but we'll draw students who might not necessarily come here otherwise. Last thing, I'll just offer a brief comment on the issue of return on investment. And luckily for WKU, we can use existing faculty resources to teach all these courses. They're already on the books. They're already being filled by students in the programs, and we expect strong enrollment. So we think this is not going to cost us a lot of extra money to offer this new curriculum. Thank you, and I'd like to ask Scott to make some comments as well.
Just to follow up briefly on what Eric had to say, and he touched on this a little bit, but we do think that the curriculum does provide outstanding preparation for law school and graduate school, of which we've already done a really good job. And one of our alums is over there in the corner. I had to put it up proud that Andrea is a political science major years ago. In addition to preparing people for law and graduate school, we've emphasized the core competencies that we're that employers are looking for. You know, things like analytical reasoning, critical thinking, communication, working with other folks. There's a significant emphasis on community engagement, ethical judgment, cultural competency, global literacy. And we've already seen that a lot of our minors that don't go to graduate school find success in the private sector, and then also certainly public and nonprofit profit sectors as well. And so we anticipate that this is going to be actual preparation. The other thing I think that we don't think enough about is also how this major will complement work with other majors. There's a lot of research out there that suggests two majors is better than one. And this is going to be not just a tremendous first major, it's also going to be an excellent second major and complement not only what we have in Potter College with criminology and history and political science and communication, but it would work very well with economics, the Bachelor of Arts, forensic psychology, those type of things. And then really want to emphasize, this is part of a larger umbrella, that one of the things we're trying to think is, why WKU? Why would somebody choose, if they're interested in legal studies or some of these topics, human rights or public affairs, why would they choose to come to WKU? And we think this offers them that argument for it, that as part of a larger umbrella that we're emphasizing in Potter College, that this will complement. We've just recently changed the name from paralegal studies to professional legal studies. And so we have this legal studies umbrella where we'd have this liberal arts major, the more applied professional legal studies, but we also have a competitive mock trial program, our pre-law advising honor society. And so this is something I think that will really set us apart from a lot of other institutions to think about. And to think about free law and thinking legal areas or human rights, this is a much bigger program and I think will help us in that area. Eric and I are more than happy to answer your questions. Meryl can probably answer them as well.
Any comments or questions from anyone on the committee or the board? We do have all our committee members present this morning.
Regent Bale and the faculty involved, thank you. This is another wonderful example of what happens when we turn a critical eye to ourselves and think about what it is we can build and do and why WKU. And I just think it's an outstanding example of thinking about, as a first step, what are the resources we have? How do we maximize those in a way that's good for enrollment, good for our intellectual positioning in the Commonwealth and the region? And building upon that, how do you continue, as you grow, to attract additional investment, additional innovation into those programs? And so I just kudos to to Spotter College and to the faculty involved. I think it's another exemplar of that kind of innovative thinking about market, intellectual distinctiveness, and creating opportunity for our students to have applied experiences. Outstanding work.
Any other comments? Certainly, I think all of these meet the spirit of the CAPE project, and I think represent very innovative new things. Curry, you're not, you're on mute. It's all your mouth.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I think this is a great addition, and I'm very pleased with this new major, and I'm happy to support it.
Very good. All right. If there are no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion.
To approve the establishment of the Bachelor of Arts and Legal Studies.
Have a motion.
Second.
And a second from Regent Ball. Any further discussion, comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. We'll move on to our second action item, which is part of the athletics, I believe, Cheryl.
Yeah, it is for the approval of the undergraduate certificate in athletic coaching, and this will be presented by Brian Meyer, assistant professor in physiology and recreation. Brian?
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me. Hopefully you can hear me okay. So the athletic coaching certificate is a 12 credit hour, four course curriculum. If you can see that in front of you, we have three core courses and one coaching elective course that they can select from a short list of coaching opportunities. These three core courses include PE290, which is a coaching principles class, where we introduce the basics and foundations of principles for coaching. We have a scientific conditioning, strength and conditioning class, and finally an advanced principles of coaching course. So we have two distinct levels of coaching courses in this curriculum. We also have a short list of those sport-specific elective courses, making it a 12 credit hour certificate. So the certificate will serve to fill a need both in state and in the region, we feel. There is a need for young qualified coaches in this field, and a few statistics to help support that. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects a 12% employment growth for coaches over the next 10 years. So over the next decade, opportunities for employment for coaches will grow by 12%. Part of that comes from the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, or the KHSAA, statistics that shows a growth in student athlete participation consistent over the past 3 years, and in fact, this past year set records for student athlete participation at 107,166 student athletes statewide, which is phenomenal. That's up 7,523 student athletes from 2014, which is a 7.2% growth. So great statistics and growth numbers there for participation statewide. KHSAA also demonstrates an increase in school-sponsored sport offerings. Currently, they offer 13 traditional sports, like your football, volleyball, basketball, soccer, your traditional sports that we're used to, but also six sport activities they're called, like bowling, fishing, competitive cheer, field hockey, and most recently esports, and a couple others are also being offered. So increases in coaching opportunities, increases in student participation, student-athlete participation statewide, and the sport offerings all kind of equal a need for additional qualified coaches into the field. And then finally, the Kentucky High School Athletic Association recognizes two levels of coaches currently, level one and level two. Level one are current faculty, administrators, or school staff members, certified faculty or administrators that are holding coaching positions. So those are students who graduate and go through the teacher preparation program or administrative program. Level two coaches are all others, non-school employees. And those level two coaches have to obtain minimum industry standards through online coaching classes like fundamentals of coaching, sport safety, rules and regulations in Kentucky, etc. Our certificate program will satisfy those minimum industry standards to become a level two coach and compete for those level two coaching positions statewide. And the last thing I'll say is this certificate program requires no additional faculty, no additional resources or equipment. We feel that we're sustainable with the faculty resources that we currently have. So we're excited about the opportunity and we look forward to your feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Comments, questions from anyone? I'll make one comment, and this won't surprise people, but I do hope that as part of the curriculum, whether it's in the scientific base or conditioning, that we include a segment on the importance of sleep with athletics. Coaches today that are familiar with sleep research are making a big deal of that, and the new mantra is not practice makes perfect, but practice with sleep makes perfect. So I do hope we can incorporate something about the neuroscience behind athletic performance and sleep.
I can tell you that there is a module in there that we talk about coaches taking care of themselves and avoiding burnout too, so that's what you're talking about. Taking care of themselves as coaches first.
Anyone else have any comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Brinkley.
A second.
And a second from Regent Spiller for approval of the undergraduate certificate in athletic coaching. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. We move from athletic coaching to forestry.
We have an undergraduate certificate in forestry. Roger texted me early this morning and reminded me that very shortly after I came here, and mean that we had brought the first minor course with you. Now, as I'm leaving, we have the certificate for you. So, Roger, you're up.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you for inviting me to be here. As a process of the FAPE committee, it was suggested that we switch from a minor in forestry to a certificate program in forestry, which makes perfect sense due to the circumstances that we can reach out to people in the community as well as in other states to get a certificate in forestry at this time. One of the things that's happened since I have been very involved in the industry all across the state is we had a reduction in trained people who could actually do floral design. And in the past year, I probably had as many as 4 or 5 calls a week wanting to know if I had any students that would be available to come and work at various different floral shops around the state and even in other states. This industry has also went toward more in the hospitality management, interior hotel restaurant management, in which this program we will be going across disciplines and working with the department about applying human services, and they will be using this as part of their program for their students to get a certificate in forestry. I'm very involved in the Forest Association, Tennessee State Forest Association, and also the American Institute of Floral Designers, which I'm a certified member of. And within those programs, we are going to be able to advertise and hopefully get people to come in to do the certificate in those particular areas. It's been very well received, especially by the Tennessee Forest Association. I've been talking with them, and even several of the owners of forest and floral providers there are interested in coming and taking the program, which is great. I think the numbers are going to be very strong, because there has already been a lot of interest I've been putting out there for the last year. People trying to get people to understand what we're doing here at the university. I think that he had a very good suggestion of doing this, because I believe the enrollment will increase quite a bit in this program. So, pretty much all I have to say. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval of the certificate in forestry.
So moved.
And I'll second.
Motion by Regent Brinkley and a second by Regent Spiller. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Our last item concerns a certificate in Spanish language.
We present that from Alex Poole.
Hello, everybody. We know from our research, nationally, internationally, and locally, that the ability to speak with some fluency another language is vital for individual progress, but also the growth of our country. An interesting report done by the American Academy in Arts and Sciences showed that in the United States, our lack of bilingualism hurts us politically, hurts us economically, hurts us diplomatically and militarily. At the same time, as department head and as faculty, we have found that a lot of students do actually want to pursue another language. However, many of them are already in very credit-heavy programs. So they want to go into healthcare, they want to go into engineering, they want to go into business. And they like Spanish, and they recognize the value of it, but they don't have the time in their schedule to take a minor or a major. And Spanish and all of our languages are like those other credit-heavy majors. You have to devote a lot of time and attention, and usually you'll have to do at least a semester abroad. Combined with another major, for many students, unless they come in with a lot of credit hours already, that's practically impossible. We also know that Spanish is a special language in the United States. It's not like other languages. It is the second most spoken language, and the United States is probably the largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. You can go a couple feet from here, half a mile, speak Spanish. That doesn't happen with any other language. We have a need in our society for teachers who have some ability to speak Spanish because of the number of students in our schools. We have the need for nurses who speak some Spanish because of the number of Latino patients that they have. And we certainly have a need for people who work commerce and business to have some proficiency with Spanish when they travel and they work with international customers. This certificate, finally, also is part of the strategic plan. We're offering concrete short-term credentials to our students that they can take and use in those positions. The certificate consists of 18 hours. The students can complete it in five semesters or six semesters. It doesn't overload them, but it gives them the ability to function, and it gives them the confidence to continue learning the language after they leave college. And maybe even some of them want to pursue it even more for a major or a minor. It does not require no more resources. These are courses we already have in place.
Good. Thank you. Questions, comments?
I appreciate you linking it to the strategic plan.
Hear, hear. <Yeah. laughs> And again, all of these programs mold with tape, ultimately with RAMP and the other initiatives in place for several years. All right. If there are no other questions, we'll open that up for nomination. Regent Spiller.
Second.
And second by Regent Brinkley. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. So all of these requests are approved. And before we close the Academic Affairs Committee, I want to make notice of the fact that this will be Provost Stevens' last Academic Committee. And she has decided to retire at the end of this month and move on to life after academia. She stepped into this role at a important, difficult time of the university and has been great for me to work with, and I think deserves applause from everyone across the university. President Caboni, you might wish to comment about that.
Regent Bale, thank you. Provost Stevens, when I invited her, asked her, begged her, I can't remember which words I would have used, to step into this role for a couple of years, no one had any idea of the challenges that we would face. We knew some of them, but certainly not the coronavirus. And Cheryl, I want to thank you for your leadership of the institution. The way in which we navigated those decisions, I think, were exemplary. And I'm thankful for the work that you did to help us come through on the other side of this as we did. There were many times when you worked with and collaborated with the academic administration, but also faculty and governance to help us get to good. And as you well know, those are always challenging conversations. But I think that you engaged in those conversations with grace and good faith. And the last is I'm personally thankful for the way in which you challenged me, supported me, listened to me, helped me not step into holes when possible, and guided the academic enterprise with great skill. And so we will miss your presence on a daily basis, but you're not going far unless you go on another three-week trip across the country. But we are thankful for all you've done for our institution and look forward to your mentorship, certainly in the fall, of some folks here as you have a culminating sabbatical and think about how it is you engage productively, but not necessarily every day at the university. So, Cheryl, thank you for everything. I appreciate you so much.
Regent Spiller, Cheryl, before you making comments, I think Regent Spiller would like to pour on some accolades.
You think that's what I'm going
to call it? I would just echo those comments and then also say, as we had the honor of attending some of the same meetings this last year in which we heard the fears of our faculty as they went into the unknown, Provost Stevens was open and transparent in every way that she possibly could and was receptive to everything that the faculty said. They didn't always hear that, but yet many times her answer to the request they had is, we're already doing that. And if it's not happening, let me know where it's not happening and I will look into it and find a way to fix that now. She is, you know, the faculty advocate, and I hope that our new provost is the support of the faculty as we look for things to be
for academics to be at the forefront of what we're trying to do. So I do appreciate the work that she was doing there. I have a question for her. And before we yield the floor and before we let her, whatever farewell she wants to say, I didn't want to say this earlier as we were going through these action items, because I don't want to single anyone out. But, you know, in the 15 years that I've been at the university, and I've watched action items come to the Board of Regents again and again and again, and I've created some myself, including, I was sharing with Jace Lux, 15 years ago I helped create the EDD, and as we did that, we were told a statement that we heard today again and again and again, and you see it in the notes that we see. This program is being done with no new faculty resources. And I'm wondering, if have we done a program that you're aware of where we actually said, yes, we're going to put new faculty resources or other resources into it, or are we constantly, because it's an unwritten rule amongst the faculty and the deans and the department chairs that if you say, even if we got to buy a library book, it's probably not going to go through. So I just wonder if you could give us, as part of what you may say, some comments about the state of our academics, state of the resources, where we are. So since you have no political axe to grind here, put her on the spot.
Yeah, thanks for putting me on the spot. I really appreciate that. I think that we have the framework to be an absolutely excellent university that provides a comprehensive high-quality field experience for our students. I think that the visit will give us the opportunity to grow and to bolster and support some of the strongest areas that we have with potential for that growth. And I think that I hope you all look very carefully at those areas that really could grow and that support the region in terms of their economic growth as well. Because we need to partner with the region better than we do. We need to be talking to companies who hire our students better than we do. But we have that potential. What we need is leadership and that doesn't mean President Cavoni, that means at the college level, to engage in conversations with people in the region who hire our students, people in the region who are interested in growing businesses. There's that innovation thing again. We should be more engaged with these things, but I think that thoughtful fusion of resources in areas that could just expand and fly are, and data-driven, of course, we have the Gray Associates platform, which I love and has helped us really put resources where our academic program growth could be. I think that our faculty are strong and they care, but they need to focus their efforts on, I think, not just the classroom. Many people say, I'm teaching my classes, and I'm doing a good job, and for the most part they are. But there's more to being a faculty member than just teaching classes. There's service to the institution, there's scholarship that's relevant and applied. And I like to think that as we move forward and are more critical about how we use our resources, that we can incentivize faculty appropriately and reward them appropriately as well. It's a big job. The provost position is a big job. It was interesting. I was in Montana. I met the president of the University of Montana. Just happened to walk by our table, and I was having lunch with a colleague who works there. He's the vice president for research. And the president stopped to say hello, and we were talking about what we had done with respect to COVID and how our enrollment was going and some strategies we were using for just navigating academics. And he said, you know, our provost position is very narrow. What we do with our provost is just academics. All they worry about, this person worries about, is with what's happening in the academic bubble. And at WKU, you know, we as a cabinet really get involved in all aspects of the institution, which is a much nicer, it makes it a nicer job and the interaction between cabinet members and that trickle down into the staff and faculty at the institution, I think makes it a much more impactful and nice place to work. I've really enjoyed working here. I have thoroughly enjoyed meeting people and working with my colleagues, and just I love the institution. I was laughing with President Boney a couple weeks ago, months ago, and I said, I love the circus. This is what I love. This university is the circus. I love what we do. I love the mission. I love the students, the work every day. I love that. The sideshows, not so much. but thank you for your comments, and thank you.
I think we all appreciate the view that much of the work over the last few years has positioned Western Kentucky University well to be one of the real success stories in higher education moving forward out of the economy, out of the pandemic. And Cheryl has 2 days guaranteed next year at the Old Faithful Inn in Yellowstone, which she can look forward to, and I think it's with gratitude that we appreciate the faithfulness that you've demonstrated toward our university.
Thank you, Philip. That was nice.
With that, Mr. Chairman, Academic Affairs Committee, business is concluded.
Thank you, Chair Bell, and thank you for a great year of service and members of the Academic Affairs Committee. We next turn to our Finance and Budget Committee, Chair McKinney.
Okay. I've been asked, before we get into the agenda, for a deeper introduction to our internal auditor, Jesse. Jesse, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the warm welcome I've had so far. For those of you I've gotten the pleasure to meet at this point. So a little bit about myself. My name is Jesse Napier, as mentioned, and I'm a certified internal auditor. I'm originally from White House, Tennessee. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that area, but I've met a few people that are so far. And I attended the University of Tennessee, where I majored in accounting, and I actually worked as a student auditor during my tenure there and began my career full-time right after graduation, working in the internal audit office. About 4 years ago, I decided to move closer to home, to my husband, my now husband, and I transitioned to a senior internal auditor role at Vanderbilt University, and I've done enjoyed my time there, learned a lot, and I'm very grateful to be here at Western Kentucky and learn about all the great work that's being done across campus and build partnerships with the various functions across campus. And thank you all again for the welcome, and I'm looking forward to doing some great work with all of you.
I think y'all will all be impressed with her and we were in the interview process. There's no doubt in our minds when we talked to her. We had the person. Thank you, Jesse. All right. Moving on to our first agenda, FB1, approval of personnel actions.
It's just a standard personnel actions and one-time payments for the final quarter of the year. And so, as I said, when I met with Shane and David, we really had no issues with those on the list. So,
is there any questions or comments about this item? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve FB1 from the committee. Thank you, Linda. Second, George, thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. All right. Motion carries. And that ends my short of deal.
Thanks, Chair McKinney, and once again, thank you for your committee's work over the last year. And appreciate all that you've done. We next turn to our Student Affairs Committee, Chair Henson.
Thank you, Chair Bell. Chair Bell. I'm sorry, Freddie.
I'm sorry, Philip. I'm moving on. I'm sorry.
Not too fast.
My brain was thinking, don't say that, because it kept popping my head, and I said it anyway. I'm sorry.
Feeling the way.
Ethan, would you like to take over since I've blundered so badly?
Thank you, Chair Henson. Thank you, Chair Higdon. Thank you, Chair Bell. Thank you. I'm glad to come before you today with an information update from our learning leader, our living learning communities for our first year village that we will kick off this fall. So I hope to be the human interest story today from a special budget meeting to this committee meeting. But to do so, I have a talented staff cast who is going to come up and present on this program and its program development. We started this conversation last fall, introduced the conversation of the new iteration of the living learning communities, and we're going to give you an update of how we're doing and where we are, and what this program looks like. And what is most important about this program is it's a foundation for the evolution of our first year experience at Western Kentucky University, but more importantly, it is an exceptional example of this cross-divisional partnership that we have with ESE and with Academic Affairs and what we've been able to achieve together. It's really exciting. There's a great synergy and great development from this experience, and we're going to continue to work with this. And it's a great hallmark of what we'll be able to do. So let me invite the talented people up here to provide you with some input and information about this program. So Sierra Waller, Marco Demunchik, Blair Jensen, Daniel Super, please join me in front of the room. We have a brief presentation to provide you with an update on that program. I think we'll pull it up. And Blair, I think you're kicking us off, aren't you? I'm going to give you the driver's seat.
All right.
So, please.
Well, good morning, all members of the board. It's an honor to be here presenting alongside my colleagues from across our divisions to provide you with a brief update and our progress as it pertains to living learning communities. So we thought we would start with some information first about our students. So as a reminder, we will be onboarding 22 living learning communities here at WKU come fall 2021. Of those 22, 13 are academically based. The remaining 9 are interest or interdisciplinary based living learning communities. Those 22 living learning communities will be housed in 8 different residence halls on our campus, 6 of which are currently in the first year village. The other 2 include Minton Hall and Rose Harlan Hall. I'm happy to report this morning that we have 833 confirmed living learning community participants, and we are so looking forward to welcoming these students home to their new home on the Hill. Now, of these 833 students, 371 will be housed in Normal and Regents Halls, with the remaining 462 in the other residence halls on our campus. Of this 833, 30% are currently underrepresented minorities on our campus. So I thought we'd provide you with a brief update on the facilities themselves. So many of you had the opportunity earlier this year to tour Normal Hall, so you've had the opportunity to see the facility itself, but you perhaps haven't seen what really makes kind of a hall a home, which includes our furniture. So we wanted to provide you with that update this morning. So we'll start first with our resident rooms. You can see here pictured all of the furniture that will be provided to each resident of the residence hall room. You can see each student will be provided with a lofted bed, a mattress, a dresser, a desk, and a task chair. That dresser and chair will be on casters, which really allows our students the opportunity to customize their space and make it their own little home away from home. Pictured here are the lounge spaces. Normal and Regents halls are pod-style residence halls, comprised of 25 students apiece. So within each pod, there are 12 double occupancy rooms. And in addition to those 24 students, one resident assistant, making a total of 25 students per pod. Included in those pods are 2 community-style bathrooms, as well as 2 private bathrooms, and what we are commonly referring to as the living room, a pod lounge. So you can see the furniture that will be featured in these pod lounge spaces on the screen now. So, take a step back here and take a look at our lobbies. You'll see in the upper left-hand corner, this is a picture of the Normal Hall lobby. In the lower right-hand corner, this is a picture of the Regents Hall lobby. So you can see that there's lots of comfortable seating. There's also some task spaces where students can hang out, work on projects, and spaces where they can socialize with one another. In addition, if we look at the Regents Hall lobby photo, you'll see that there is overflow for that dining location. They'll be located on the first floor of that building as well. Then lastly, rounding out our facilities update, wanted to showcase some of the academic spaces within these residence halls. So both Normal and Regents Halls will feature a classroom space, which you can see pictured in the upper right-hand corner of the screen currently. Those classrooms will hold up to 30 students. The idea here is that students are not only living together in the residence hall floors, but they're also taking classes together, with some of those course sections actually being instructed in the residence hall themselves. So imagine that short commute, right? Just from your residence hall room, right down the stairs to your classroom for your classes. You'll also see pictured here on the left-hand side of the screen are study spaces. So there are study spaces located throughout the residence halls, on the residence hall floors, and on the first floors of those residence halls, as well as our faculty office spaces that are located in the photo in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. So we're inviting our faculty fellows that are sponsoring each of our Living Learning communities to host office hours in the residence halls and engage on a personal level with students participating in these very important programs. So next I'm going to hand the clicker off to my colleagues Sierra and Marco. We're going to talk with you a little bit about our Faculty Fellows program.
Thank you so much, Blair. Sierra and I wanted to chat with you a little bit about the Faculty Fellows program, which I think is a very innovative twist in the Living Learning Community program. And on your right-hand side, you will see the names of the faculty who are participating in the Living Learning Community Faculty Fellow program. And I just want to take a minute to pause and think about what's behind these names and the fact that these faculty signed up to lead Living Learning Communities. They did so last spring, right? If you can imagine teaching and laboring in the springtime and thinking ahead and signing on to do something that's pretty pioneering at Western Kentucky University and something that I think is going to set us apart from other universities in the Commonwealth. And this list wouldn't have come together had we as a university not come together to work on this, right? From President Caboni to Provost Stevens to Dr. Logan, and then the incredible support from the dean's offices and the department heads, right? So it was truly a collective effort to bring this program together. And so we're incredibly excited about this program for three reasons. One, Western Kentucky University distinguishes itself in terms of its teaching. And in the LLC communities, what we will find is that the teaching is even further innovative in three ways. One, it will be personalized. Two, it will be experiential, right? There will be a lot of hands-on activities and a lot of events that ask students to apply what they've learned in the classroom outside of the classroom. And three, there will be a high degree of professionalization. So in all these three ways, we think that the Living Learning Communities will be a standout. Second, the faculty fellows will not only be crucial in the classroom, but also outside the classroom, helping students transition socially. As we know, this can be a tough time for our students, and the faculty fellows will develop personalized relationship with the students and also make sure that the students within the Living Learning Communities develop relationships with each other. And then finally, something that I'm especially passionate about is that students develop a sense of belonging to Western Kentucky University and to Bowling Green. And the faculty fellows will be crucial in identifying events and programs that will bring various parts of the campus to the Living Learning Community, as well as bring Bowling Green to campus. And my wonderful colleague, Sarah Wall, will tell you about some concrete examples of how this will take place.
So as a start, we'd like for you to hear from one of our faculty fellows. We're going to play the first 20 seconds of this video, which is one of our faculty fellow spotlights by Dr. Dawn Winters.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dawn Winters, and I'm a faculty fellow for the Citizenship and Social Justice Living and Learning Community. I'm so happy that you decided to check into this LLC. I've been a Hilltopper since 2002 as a student. I became a faculty member in 2008. And I've taught classes in English, linguistics, literacy, and criminology.
And so what we would like for you to see with the Faculty Fellow Spotlight video, we're partnering with our University Marketing and Office of Admission to utilize our faculty members in the recruitment process to allow them to connect with our students before they even step foot on campus. But what better way to start with a fellow Hilltopper recruiting some of our future Hilltoppers to the Hill and also getting them excited about our LLC programming activities that we have on our next slide.
So while that is booting up, awesome, thank you. You guys are quick, and I'm slow. An example of one of our LLCs where we want to introduce you to a little bit about the programming and the faculty involvement is with our Leadership and Communication LLC. This LLC is an interdisciplinary LLC, meaning that it's open to any WKU major and student. This LLC will be led by Dr. Wren Mills in conjunction with Dr. Heather Strode, and they've worked to center their program activities around themes of leadership and communication, and looking at that in a different lens. So exposing students culturally and with global awareness through our Bowling Green International Festival, thinking about building the foundation of communication and that trust through our WKU Challenge course, and working alongside our students, allowing them to be a part of the process. The participants in this LLC will get to hand-select campus and community leaders that they would like to see as guest speakers. As we've heard earlier today about our new programs and certificates coming in, our LLCs fit very nicely into that. The linked courses in some of our LLCs not only count towards a student's major and colonnade requirements, some of them also count towards WKU certificates. In this LLC in particular, students will end their first year with 6 hours towards the organizational leadership certificate and the workplace communication certificate, which allows our students from day one to be thinking about how they can enhance their WKU degrees and their experiences heading into the career field. Also, we know that this cannot be done by our faculty fellows alone. This will be a team effort. All of our LLCs will have affiliated faculty and staff members within and across their disciplines. In particular, one of our affiliated faculty members here in the room will be President Caboni with the Leadership and Communication LLC. Also, we will have our instructors, Professor Heather Strode and Professor Charlotte Elder, working in this LLC. And we hope that these teams will help to create innovative pedagogy, engagement inside and outside of the classroom, and mentorship of our students, and also providing that well-rounded representation of the great faculty and staff members and student ambassadors that we have on campus. And having this team will also lead us to thinking about how we evaluate and assess these programs. And I am going to hand that over to Daniel as he will speak to our goals and objectives in assessment.
Yeah, great. So thanks. That was all the very exciting part. So I promise not to bring the energy down with the academic components here of program design and assessment. I mean, if you can imagine 800 plus students, 22 plus communities, and that's just going to keep growing, we have to think like organizationally, how are we leveraging this in a common experience, right, across these disparate communities? So this team, you know, Chair Higdon, soon to be Chair Bale, but Chair Higdon said, we're talking about being all in. These people are all in. You can tell by the passion in their voice. Like, they care about students, and they care about creating infrastructure at this university that like-minded people can plug into to engage with students. And I think that's what LLCs represent. You know, many times we talk to colleagues who they care so much, staff, faculty, they care so much about student success, but it's like, how do I engage in meaningful ways beyond just a one-on-one of the happenstance of who's in my class that semester or, you know, who happened by my office? And LLCs give us that opportunity for a very focused, bounded group of students to really, you know, adopt them, so to speak, and carry them through. So you'll see here that from the literature, there are 7 common first-year experience outcome domains, and while LLCs are amazing, they're a high-impact practice, they're excellent, it's an excellent tool, they can't do everything. And so the first component that we had to consider is, what are we going to leverage LLCs for on this campus in light of the overall first-year experience? And we chose these three, retention, academic skills, and connection to campus. And once you orient yourself in that direction, then you can start systematically building out what this program looks like. And so, again, this team very laboriously and probably with great patience with myself. We worked our way through, we worked our way through creating these three goals. They also align with what the literature says have the largest effect size on students. And that is that students experience a smooth academic transition, that they experience a smooth social transition, and they develop a sense of belonging. And what we know, those of you who have organized large-scale programs, you know, you don't activity your way, you don't program your way into achieving a goal. You don't. This is aspirational, it's kind of the end game, and where we're orienting ourselves. So then, I lost control here. That's okay. I trust you. The next step was, like, we have to break that down. Say, if we're going to achieve smooth academic transition, like, what does that mean? What are more specifically, what are the objectives that would be necessary to achieve smooth academic transition? And so this is a logic model. I promise you can exhale. I'm not going to take you through all this. But I just wanted to represent how the objectives in concert achieve the goals. And those of you who are familiar with this as a tool, a logic model, you'll notice that we're missing the column here for activities. That's intentional because, like I opened with, we have 22 communities, 800 students orienting in the same direction with the flexibility for each of them to deliver their programming uniquely to the needs of their community, all achieving the same objectives and the same goal. And so this is just a visual representation of how that all fits together. I think I'm going to have to trust you again. Nope, you fixed it. So this is how we conceptualize kind of the assessment and the way this is structured. And this is a adaptation of Aiston's IAO model. And the idea here is to say outcomes are a function of inputs, but they're also a function of environment. And the reason I really like this as a conceptual model is to say, I don't think I saw Tuesday here or Angela from IR. They are excellent in creating, and they've done an excellent job in institutional research in creating a model of predicting how well students will do based on some of these inputs. Problem with that is those things are static. Like, once they get to us, what do we do about it? And what's exciting in thinking about how we're structuring LLCs and the way we're conceptualizing them is it matters what they come into. And so the way we're planning to assess this and kind of the conceptual understanding of this is, if we want to achieve these outcomes, we need to account for those things, you know, statistically, methodologically, and those kind of considerations, to see the effect of LLCs and how we can leverage this moving forward. So finally, just to demonstrate to you that we've been intentional, we've been strategic, and we've created a plan. I've just put one goal on the screen instead of all three, just to demonstrate how you'll see if that's the goal, these are the objectives everyone's aiming at. We have a plan for data collection, for timelines, for procedures, for responsible parties, to kind of wrangle 22 communities, 800 plus students, all headed in the same direction and say, what does it look like to experience an LLC at WKU? And so the last thing I'll say, and I'd be remiss to say this, we have to consider how challenging it is to come in as a first year student. It's challenging. I mean, many times it's a chasm that's like 2.5 months long in a student's life. 2.5 months from being a senior to being a freshman, but it's a chasm. And even more so, if the last year and a half, they've experienced COVID school, right? And so I think it's incumbent on us, and I think it's demonstrated here well by our investment in LLCs to say, we have a systematic infrastructural plan to plug our resources in to receiving you and to carrying you through that very crucial first year, academically, socially, and by a sense of belonging. And so that's kind of the program design, the structure, and the assessment, a very broad overview of how we're planning to approach this systematically. Any questions for any of us, not just myself?
Does anyone have any questions?
I think this is one of the most exciting things that's happened at this university or any university in the Commonwealth, probably for maybe decades, I don't know. But I wonder how much communication is going to go on between the LLC and the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, which I think has great ability to collaborate.
We've already begun. We've met with the LLC faculty fellows in May. In fact, we had an optional meeting in May, and all the participants signed up, right? And so we thought, we don't know how many faculty are going to come back 2 weeks after the semester ended for this workshop, and they all came. And additionally, we're going to have another workshop that we've all collaborated on in August, a half a day. So that's the way we're getting started. And then and Blair and Housing and Res Life has lots of experience in LLCs, and we're going to continue their tradition of doing monthly meetings with our faculty fellows.
Seems like a marriage made in heaven.
Absolutely. And we're very grateful for the opportunity to partner and to work together across divisions to best serve our students.
Shane, I know you had some comments.
I'm just going to say, as someone who had been out in the community and had neighbors bring their kids to my house and say, please help them, they don't know what they're doing, and trying to get into the university and going through their emails with them and say, hey, that housing email, you should have responded to that. And hey, this, you know, is their first generation college students. That chasm you talk about, we have no idea what's there. They don't understand the terminology that we use. And this is something I say in my own college all the time. We're using words that have meaning to us, but no meaning to them whatsoever. And, you know, I hear about students who say, you know, they show up to school and they didn't realize they needed to bring things for their dorm. And it just, you know, hey, I had a scholarship, so it's going to be, they don't know what they don't know. So I think embedding faculty with them and helping, you know, figure those things out and building those relationships is going to be a great tool there to help. We just don't know what's going to come up and how to get them through that. So that was my first comment. The second thing I want to do is Marco, could you please come back, center here for
me? Do I want to?
Yes. So please give us your title again.
I'm the director for the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning.
I just want, in my role in the Student Affairs Committee and the Academic Affairs Committee, I wanted to make sure everyone knew what a hero Marco and his staff was to the campus community for the last year and a half. And when the faculty, you have old guys like me trying to figure out how to connect with students who were in your class last week, and now they're spread all over the world, and they don't necessarily have computers and whatever other hurdles there may be. And to suddenly move it into high gear, and all the do you have any statistics on all the training sessions your team offered, right off the top of your head?
In the past 2 years, we've consulted with approximately 1,100 faculty members. That we've had 1,100 faculty visits, and we collaborate with faculty on two levels, with individualized consultations and with holding workshops. And to give you a sense, given the size of our faculty, there are five instructional designers working with the entire campus. So the praise really goes to them. They're sort of the heroes of the COVID. And I would like to say that in terms of our center, none of this would be possible without the faculty actually coming to us. And it's been an incredible partnership. And we were just honored to see our faculty rise to the challenge.
So, you know, just as he says, the faculty have to want to improve. There are some expectations that we would try to do that, but you know, I'm a full professor. I don't have to do that anymore. I can just ignore my students, right? But many people stepped up to try to bridge that. It was a resource that I think we did not fully appreciate until we had it. And I appreciate your team stepping up into that gap and working as hard as you did. So I wanted to make sure everyone knew.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you.
I appreciate the shout out.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a comment I'd like to make. I feel compelled to call on Dr. Sells, because what we're doing here is something we've seen through the ISEC program for the last two or three years. I know that my wife and I are involved in it, but I give all the credit to her and her staff, and being able to do it at the community level for students of color who are first generation, and then being able to see this expanded across the university and the engagement of faculty, I think is a huge plus. But I do want to recognize that when I look at some of the results that she was able to create, and then what I heard here, that really being nailed campus-wide, I think that's exactly the innovation that we were referencing, the strategic initiatives that we were referencing earlier, that those things actually have been going on at the university, and now it's nice to see that they've been expanded and that we're going to be able to touch and impact more of our students. Because that's really, you know, I think it's just been said earlier, that's what this is all about. It's not about the faculty, it's not about parents, it's about how do we bring students in,
get them active, get outcomes that we want, but more importantly, it's not just outcomes, it's impact. And when, at the end of the day, I always think about, just because I graduated someone doesn't mean that I actually helped them impact the way they live their life. And so I'm excited to hear this. And also excited that I'm sure that that Dr. Sales has been involved in the process, and some of the things that he's been involved in are now something that has been a much broader aspect for the use and the time of the students and what we could help us help the future. I just wanted to
know. Martha, could I ask you to stand up?
Just ask her to stand up. Do you want to do an introduction of our Martha?
I don't know that I can.
And nor do you have to.
I probably would try to do it and not get in trouble. But she said, I can't believe you didn't say this. This is Dr. Sales. And I'll tell you that for CJ and I to be supporters of the university and for us to have the honor and the privilege to be able to be a part of this program. This is not anything to do with us other than the thrill of us being able to see dedicated faculty and staff at the university committed to students, helping them, and us being a part of this right here. Dr. Sales is a leader, and her energy, her excitement, her passion, and her expertise is just goes beyond. And when I tell people across the country about what's going on at Western, I always give them a different name of the person who leads the effort because I don't want anyone coming back trying to steal out stuff.
Thank you.
And well, Dr. Sales, our interim dean
of students.
Yes. And did you see her flashy sunglasses, George? Or flashy glasses, George?
Readers.
I wasn't going to ask what it was.
She's very fashionable today as well. Well, Dr. Logan, team, thank you all. This has been an excellent... Oh, Sandra.
I'm sorry, Regent, if I could just...
Can I remember your name?
What's your title? So there are very few things that in one's career that you're going to remember forever, and... Investiture, when we talked about the first year village, I know people didn't understand in some ways what that meant. It was really shorthand for taking down two dorms and putting two new buildings up. And I impressed upon everyone to not think of that this way, but to think about how this could be transformative for that undergraduate experience. How could we embed the academic literature in what we do, and how do we work to partner academics with student life in a way that enhances our efforts in retention, success in performance, academic performance, and integration into the community. And what you see here is 4 years of work that was really done quietly for many people behind the scenes, and is an outcome of the investment and the choices that we made strategically as an institution. People say, what's the vision, and what does it mean to be a student-centered, applied research institution? This is it, and this is the differentiator. This means when you come to WKU at a $10,000 price point in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, you're getting an Oxbridge model that's only done at the best universities in the world. And this is transformative for our young people, and it's exactly what they deserve. And so thank you to the group for all of your work and your commitment to the project, but more importantly, your commitment to our students and their success.
Dr. Logan,
well, excellent presentation. It's energetic. I'm so glad we're here in person together again. Watching you all on Zoom would not be near as exciting as watching you all here today. And the enthusiasm you all have for the LLC is unbelievable, because I'm now energized, and I loved it when we toured it the last time we had our meeting. I thought, I wish I had been here, or wish they'd had those dorms. I was in Gilbert Hall in the Valley of the Dolls, and I, you know, would love to be in this dorm and what you all have developed there, and it's just fabulous. And I just listened to you all. I'm so excited. Thank you for a great presentation, and it's always good to see you, Dr. Logan, and your team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Julia, I will say this, that
I wish I were there in the room, but I will tell you on Zoom, you could hear and feel the energy.
Good, George. Good. Good. Because, you know, when we've been doing so many Zoom calls, sometimes it's hard to get that enthusiasm. If you were here, I mean, I am excited, and I might even drive fast going back to the might even get one of those speeding tickets. I haven't had one in a while, so you just never know. But that wraps up my report. Thank you, Chair Higdon.
Thank you, Chair Henson. This is what it is called being all in. Off script, I think we probably need to have a spontaneous award for the conclusion of our programming this past year and award it to Henson for the most challenging, innovating presentations of information items of all the committees. I'm sorry, all the committees, but she just walked
here, away. Here.
Dr. Logan.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our committee reports for today, Dr. Bowden.
Before we continue, I have one announcement that I would like to call on Dean Corinne Murphy to help share with you. You may recall earlier in the meeting I talked about $2 million federal grants and how important two of them and how important those are. We announced yesterday a transformative investment in our institution from the federal government that will help shape counseling for the Commonwealth and beyond. And Corinne, if you would take just a minute or two to help folks understand the significance of this grant in the history of the College of Education, the university, but also what it does.
Yes, so we're beyond excited. So this is a $1.92 million, to be very specific, almost $2 million dollar award that will be used over the next 4 years to support our counseling students, our counseling faculty, and our community as we engage together to really respond to what is a continually increasing need for social emotional learning, trauma-informed care, and just the overall mental wellness of our community. Of course, we did not anticipate that there was also going to be a pandemic to increase and exacerbate the need for this area. And so it certainly reflects on the work that our counseling program has done over the last 4 years. In 2017, there were 15 graduate students in this program. And as of today, there are 50 graduate students in this program on a continual basis. We are leading the region in managing and supporting community wellness and mental health. And so even as far as Owensboro, they're just ecstatic that we're going to be able to do this. We will use it to recruit and retain through supplemental stipends. These are working professionals. Anything that we can do to provide them additional support relieves them from second jobs or third jobs as they are working professionals and adult learners in our graduate programs. And then working with our schools and our community support centers, we'll be able to provide additional trainings to their current staff, but also for our students to be even better trained than they currently are today as we work to include some additional programming into their experience here on the Hill. So we're excited, very excited.
So let me commend both Dean Murphy and her faculty. These types of federally sponsored grants do not happen overnight. This is a four-year process to learn and assemble and have grants critiqued. And this is exactly the kind of work that we're going to continue to press upon across the enterprise in the coming years. And when we talk about research and we talk about scholarship, there are lots of different ways for us to conceptualize this. But one of the places we're going to place a bet and make even more of an emphasis is on federally sponsored investments in our institution. And that does lots of things. It transforms us in terms of what we do for the student experience and applied learning. It creates buzz and interest, not just in the Commonwealth, but regionally. It also provides budgetary support and indirect cost recovery and helps us to reinvest and re-energize and grow again the research enterprise. And so I'm very excited for their accomplishments with this grant. Another $2 million grant coming into her college as well. Per capita, when your College of Education is leading the sponsored research world, we're going to put some pressure on the other colleges to step up their games to compete as well. So congratulations, Corinne.
Thank you.
we welcome the competition.
Anything else?
No, sir.
So we need to go into executive session to...
I move that the board go into closed session as provided in KRS 61.810 for the following discussion. Discussion of proposed or pending litigation against or on behalf of the university.
Second.
I have a motion and a second, Regent Brinkley. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like, sign. We will now proceed to closed session.